It's time now for the Better Health Radio Show, and as per usual, the good doctor, Dr. Renee Boyce, she is your host, and she will come and present to you another program of the Better Health Radio Show. Let's say a very good evening, wet evening, to Dr. Renee Boyce. Good evening.
Hello, good evening, Greston. How are you?
Better than last Sunday. Not much pain today.
Okay, well, glad to hear. Okay, well, that's good to hear. I can say that I am also better than last week. So that's good
wonderful,
for us that we are in better shape than,
well, at than least previous. Now.
Good evening, everybody. Yes, true. Well, I'm hopeful that it will continue on the current trend. So good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show, helping you to live your best life. This evening, if you want to give us a call later on in the program, 434-1790, that's the number to reach us in studio. And WhatsApp should be 266-4862. Yes, that's the WhatsApp number, 266-4862. We want to say we are eternally grateful for all those of you who send in your WhatsApps, who call and who bring life to the program. And we really thank you for supporting the program. Now, this evening, I am going to go back to a topic that we have not touched since earlier in the year. And we're going to have what I am calling this evening a candid conversation on Corona. For those persons who are English language buffs, that was an alliteration because, Greston.
Yes, ma'am.
Because there were consecutive C's in that sentence. Candid conversations on Corona. Okay, so that's our teaching point for this evening. Alliteration.
Thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome. The purpose of the program is all about learning, and I will forever remember my chemistry teacher from QC, Mrs. Valerie Mosley. She was Jamaican. I'm not going to imitate her Jamaican accent for fear of doing it an injustice, but she always said you cannot learn in a vacuum. Cannot. Learning has to involve all the different facets of life.
Something tells me that teaching should.
So just because we're talking about health.
I was just going to say that. Something tells me
Pardon?
That. I was just going to say that teaching seems to be a passion of yours.
Oh my goodness me. Okay, well, I'll take that. According to some of the people, I received that. So let's have this conversation about coronavirus. And I want you to call in with your opinions. I want you to call in with your thoughts, any fears that you might have, any questions that you might have, any uncertainties that we can possibly clarify for you. And of course, like I always say, if I don't have the information to hand, if I'm uncertain about a particular thing that you might have asked, I will definitely research and get back to you when I have researched that topic. So Greston and I, we're the only ones here today. So we're going to have this candid conversation. So when most people were out celebrating the end of 2019, somewhere in China, Wuhan, China, there were several people who were becoming ill with this respiratory illness. They were having fevers and cough and runny nose and difficulty breathing. And it seemed as though this pattern was not a normal pattern. Now, in every society, there is a particular pattern of diseases. You do have, like here in Barbados, for example, every once in a while, some person will have gastroenteritis here and there, a little pocket here and there, one or two persons. But if everybody in St. Lucie has gastroenteritis, that's an outbreak. That's an increase in the numbers far above what is expected, but it's still confined to a particular area. So they noticed that there was an outbreak of this particular viral illness, which they had not seen before. And one of the things that happened with coronavirus is the time at which it occurred, because flu season is in the latter half of the year, latter quarter of the year, sorry, and the colder months into the new year. So January, February, March, around there. And the flu has very similar symptoms to coronavirus. So was this an outbreak of the flu? So whilst many people were celebrating, bringing in the new year, we were on the verge of a pandemic. We just didn't know it at that particular point in time. But very early in January, the scientists identified the agent that was causing this increase in these respiratory cases. and it was identified as SARS-CoV-2. And the reason it was given this name is because of the way it looked under the microscope. Back in 2001, 2002, thereabouts, maybe 2000, there was the SARS outbreak. And they found that the way the virus looked under the microscope, it looked pretty similar to this one because it belongs to the same group of the coronaviruses. And the reason it's called corona is because of these projections from the surface, and it looks like a crown. So corona, crown. See, lesson number two for today. If you guys can see the expression on Grace's face, right? It is just like, she cannot be serious.
We're paying rapt attention. Continue smartly.
Okay. So the coronaviruses, they belong to the particle group, which is why the symptoms are similar to the respiratory viruses, because they kind of belong to the same class, not exactly the same class, the flu viruses and the coronaviruses, but they belong, they have similar traits. Let's leave it at that. So how did it get from where it was into humans? It was by a zoonosis. This is what the scientists are saying. So zoonosis is when an infection is able to leave the animal kingdom and jump into the human species. And they thought that might have been coming from some of the meat in the outdoor markets, which are very rampant in China. Be that as it may, whether it was a zoonosis or not, whether persons have their own conspiracy theories about where it came from, be it a lab, be it somebody's be under somebody's bed from somewhere, that does not matter necessarily. It's important in perhaps understanding how the virus will replicate and how it spreads. But the fact remains is that we have a pandemic on our hands. In March 2020, I believe, the World Health Organization declared SARS coronavirus 2 or COVID-19 a pandemic, which means that there was no country on the face of the earth that was spared, or the vast majorities of countries had been infected. So the question is, how does it move from person to person? How does it get from Gredston to me? And the theory so far would be by contact. And it makes sense that the warnings and the advice that the health systems give, those persons who are in charge of the healthcare systems, the warnings and advice that they give to protect ourselves will be based on the ways in which they believe the virus is transmitted. So by contact, close contact. So when we have physical distancing, it's in an effort to avoid close contact because the virus is thought to be transmitted by close contact. Trying to remain more than 6 feet from other persons. Some persons find it difficult to stay away from other people. Other people have no problem staying away from other individuals.
That is very true. Very true.
Which part of the spectrum are you, Grace? Do you have difficulty staying away from others, or are you a huggy-huggy type?
Oh, no. I'm very good by myself. I'm very good. I do that very well.
Okay, so Grayston is the epitome of social distancing. You agree?
Well, for this discussion, yes.
Yes. Another way that they thought that the virus was transmitted was via respiratory droplets. So a person who is infected has a sneeze or a cough, and the droplets are able to travel some distance. And if you happen to be in the area nearby, then you can inhale these droplets, or you can touch a surface on which these droplets would have landed. And then by putting your hands where? In your mouth, your eyes, near your nose, then you can contract the illness. So which is why, again, the public health measures would be to avoid putting your hands near your mouth, your eyes, and your nose. I saw a little, they were putting up several charts, and I saw in an area for children, they had put avoid putting your hands in your T-zone. And normally when people hear T-zone, they think about makeup and they think about it shining on your forehead and down your nose and so on. But it really didn't make sense, because if you look at your eyes, your nose, and your mouth, it really does form that T. So that's a good way to remember where not to put your hands. And a colleague of mine says, in this time, you try to avoid men. Mouth, eyes, and nose. I am not so certain what he was trying to do by advising persons to avoid men, but it's a good way to remember where to and where not to put your hands. One of the things that I did in preparing for the show was to look at the statistics. And the statistics are very disheartening, very disheartening. I think one of the things that, I don't want to call it a disadvantage, but here in Barbados, living in a very small island, it's hard for us to fathom some of the numbers that are being reported. I heard on ABC News, I believe it was just 2 days ago, that the daily rate of death in the United States was 850 per day. I thought to myself, 850? Is that right? Did the person make a mistake? But when I fathomed that there are billions of people there, or over a billion people there, 850 people is possible. But if 850 people were to die here in Barbados, I do not know where this island would be. So let me just give you some of these statistics. And I'm quite sure that if you look up these statistics now, the numbers have already increased. So the worldwide cases at that time would have been 49.5 million, with 1.25 million deaths already. And one of the things that I want us to remember is that the flu also usually every year would kill millions of people as well. So it's not so alarming that 1.25 million, let me choose my words carefully, each death is a loss and a tragedy. However, it is not that this is the first time we are having such a situation where millions of persons have died from an illness. So in the USA, they have 9.89 million, and they have taken over the lead for the number of cases in the world. And they have had 237,000 deaths. So if we really want to look at it, Barbados, the population of Barbados has died in the United States of America, just to give us an idea. So our entire island has already died, in inverted commas, in the US, from COVID-19. Here in our little 2x4 island, we've had 242 cases, and to date we've had 7 deaths, and that number has remained steady for several weeks. We have our first caller, so we're going to take that call.
Good evening, Doc.
Hi, good evening.
To you and Greg Stent.
Yes, please. Good evening.
Hi, good evening. How are you?
I'm fine. And you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Okay, Doc. I want to take you back to a part of your preamble. When you spoke about in Wuhan, and they wasn't sure if people were getting this thing from animals. But I want to tell you that in recent days, or within the last week or two, I've been hearing, I can't remember if it's Sweden or Denmark, one of those countries, though, where they say they have millions of animals they call a mink, that has the virus and is transmitting this virus to humans. You heard about that?
No, I didn't.
Neither did I, but anyhow, go ahead.
Yeah. Gregson, you could pull out the word mink and tell me what kind of animal is that.
All right, I will do that for you.
Because I have never heard about an animal named a mink, but they say either...
I'm thinking of something like a mongoose.
You've heard of a mink coat?
I may be wrong. Yeah.
Yep, that's where like the first come from, mink coat, yeah.
Yeah. So are you saying a mink is like a mongoose?
All right, let me give you the... Let me give you...
Grace didn't give you the right thing.
All right, let me see if I can see it here quickly. Minks are dark-collared animals. They include otters... And as I tell you this, guess what is happening? Oh, my goodness me. All right, here we go.
You're crashing?
Correct. correct. Where was I? They include weasels, otters, and ferrets. If you have any idea what an otter is, that's part of the mink family. And hello?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Right. And they are highly sought for their fur, which... is the reason why I asked you if you've heard of a mink coat, because
right,
they're slaughtered for that part of that contribution they can give to the human race, fur for clothing.
And there's a lot of otters in the Brazilian Amazon basin area where they are hunted for whatever, but now you see possibly to get the fur to make mink coat.
Not possibly, that's what what happens.
Yeah, but though, I just want to tell you that in Sweden, either Sweden or, like I said, Sweden or Denmark, there are millions of these animals.
It's Denmark.
Right, that they know.
It's in Denmark.
Right, so you saw it then, you pulled it up.
Yes, I did.
Right, and they're going to take out millions of these animals because they're saying that these animals are the carriers of the Corona virus, and if they're passing it on to humans, and if they don't do something like killing these minks, for example, it's going to become very, very out of hand, I should say, in Europe. So I just thought I would drop that in there since you was talking about Wuhan and the possibility that it could have been spreading from animal to human. But I just wanted to know that.
Well, thank you very much. In the article, they're saying that the minks were actually infected from the humans, and these minks can act as a reservoir, and then the illness can go back from the minks to the humans, so that you get the virus being spread and spread and spread and spread.
Yeah. I heard it slightly different on the BBC, though. I heard it slightly different on the BBC. But anyway, you could be right, Doc, because I have not actually read it.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at it from the World Health Organization.
Yeah.
I'm actually here trying to read it as you speak about it.
So I just, I just thought I would draw that to your attention since you was talking about animals.
Well, thank you for it.
Yeah. Okay, I'll continue to listen.
Thank you, sir.
No problem at all. You can jump back in later if you choose to.
Yes. Okay, no problem.
Take care. Yes, Doc?
Right. So they say about 214 cases of COVID-19 have been identified in Denmark. And it's been associated with farmed minks. So he is correct. And it would be an interesting read. You can pull it up on the World Health Organization's website, who.int. A wealth of information there about COVID and what's going on with the pandemic, including the numbers that I was just speaking about and so on. Lots of information that you can get from that site, as well as from the CDC website, cdc.gov. That's the Centers for Disease Control. And we advise that you read your information from trusted sites, like the two that I just mentioned, World Health Organization and the CDC, not from any non-reputable sites that would give you misinformation and cause pandemonium in the pandemic. So I said that... The reason I chuckled is because of the look that I got from Grace. You see, y'all don't see.
Yeah, they can't see us.
You're not privy to the look. Exactly. You're not privy to the different looks and the different sarcastic looks that he sends my way. Nevertheless, we press on. It's almost 20 minutes after the hour of 6 here in Barbados and across the Eastern Caribbean.
Pandemonium.
This is the Better Health Radio Show, and I'm your host, Dr. Renee Boyce.
Pandemonium.
With Grace and Tilly in studio.
Pandemonium in the pandemic. All right. But you were just discussing about the number of people who have unfortunately lost their lives up north. And it's almost the sum total of the island of Barbados. But one of the differences regarding that place up north and here is that I would humbly suggest that we listen more than those people who believe they have a right to rights, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yes, and we will get to that. Okay. We will get to that.
All right, carry on.
Yes. So what are some of the problems that arose with COVID-19? One of the things that we really do need to understand is that it's called novel coronavirus for a reason. It's new. We have never experienced this before. This is the first thing. And as with every pandemic, every new pandemic, the persons who are living at that time are experiencing it for the first time. When the bubonic plague first happened, that would have been the first time that persons would have been experiencing it. The first time for the Spanish flu, which is another example of a pandemic that took several lives, like told a whole generation apparently. So it was a new disease. And the way medicine works is that we build upon prior knowledge. So as a medical student, for example, my knowledge base is built when I see more and more cases, when I see more and more cases, so that the decisions that I make are built. And it's the same thing in life. The decisions that I make are based on the information that I've had before. So imagine there's no before information on COVID. We can't go back to the annals of history and try to come up with a way. We have to be learning as we go. There are similarities to the SARS virus because they belong to the same family, but each virus acts in a different way. And one of the things that viruses can do is that they can mutate or change. So they particularly did one thing, and then because of the way viruses are transmitted, they have the ability to change. So instead of doing one thing, they're doing something else. So if there was a particular medication, let's say it used to kill viruses by causing the cell to explode, and then the virus changed, that medication that causes the virus to explode will no longer work because the virus has found another mechanism, another way to work. So we'll talk about that a little later on when we get into vaccines. So we were learning as we were going. And another thing that happened initially with COVID, as I mentioned before, is that it happened the same time when persons would normally get the flu. So there were people perhaps, or more than likely, who would have been missed with COVID-19, who would have been diagnosed as having had the flu. So one of the recommendations that's coming out of the U.S. is that persons should get the seasonal flu vaccine. Even although the seasonal flu vaccine is, I don't want to say a guess, but scientists tend to predict which are the most likely strains of flu that would happen in a particular year, and the vaccines are created for those particular ones. So it's not 100% guarantee that you won't get the flu, even if you've had a flu vaccine, but chances are that you won't. And therefore, if you've had your flu vaccine, the thinking is that if you get these symptoms, well, then perhaps it would raise our suspicion that you might have had a COVID-19 infection. Another, I saw when I was doing some research as well, whether persons were trying to see if they could differentiate between COVID-19 and the flu. And really and truly, the differences, apart from maybe loss of smell and the loss of taste, as well as some of the more clinical features that you see, like the microclots in the lungs and so on, it's very difficult clinically. So a patient sitting in front of me with these symptoms, it's very difficult for me to say whether or not this person has had the flu or COVID-19. So it's always about that index of suspicion, whether or not you might have been exposed. So have you traveled? Have you come into contact with somebody who might have traveled from one of the areas of high risk? And we are hearing about the different bubbles and different levels of risk and the different controversies that are arising as a result of that. But we press on as a nation. So how are you tested? How are you tested for COVID-19? Well, you would have seen the ads going on from the GIS website, and you would have seen them on the internet. You've heard it on the radio. So several of the media platforms were informing us about how we are tested for COVID-19, and it's taking a swab from the nasal passage in the back of the throat. For those persons who are on a ventilator, for example, samples can be taken from the fluid that might be in their lungs. And there are also blood tests that can be done. And what they're looking for is evidence of the genetic material from the virus to be able to say that you have had COVID. The blood test is looking for antibodies, which are proteins which are made in response to an infection. And by having positive antibodies, we can't necessarily say that you have COVID at this point in time, but we can say that you would have been infected. And there's a question about testing. Who should be tested? There are some people that think that everybody on the island should be tested. That's the point of view of some people. But when we think about the practicality of that, when we think about the cost for testing, when we think about the logistics of testing, who is going to test 270,000 people? I don't know. We don't have the manpower to test 270,000 people. So there are more likely people that you that we should test, anybody who has the clinical symptoms of COVID-19, because you really and truly do want to know whether or not this person is infected. And this has implications for contact tracing, because if this person comes back positive for COVID-19, then we're able to find out who they might have been in contact with. And believe you me, contact tracing is one of the most difficult things that you can do, because when persons go places, for example, they might leave one address, because you know there are many people in Barbados that have multiple addresses. Their mail goes one place, they have two cell phones, they live in a different parish. And I remember trying to call persons using their using last names, looking at the telephone directory and calling people based on last names and so on. So contact tracing is not impossible, but it really is not an easy task. So let me say kudos to all of those persons who are working so hard in the public health system with contact tracing and trying to find those persons who might have been exposed. Have a pleasant evening, and I hope you guys are doing well and press on with the fight. So any person who might have had COVID-19 symptoms, who might have been exposed to somebody, so being close contact for more than 15 minutes, those persons who are being prepped for certain medical or surgical procedures, because we think about the risk of the COVID-19 being spread in the hospital, and those persons in hospital are already sick, hence the reason they're in hospital. And remember that the ads that were coming out early on were saying that those persons who are immunocompromised, meaning those persons who are ill, who have chronic diseases like diabetes, hypertension, heart failure, asthma, for example, these are the persons who are more than likely or most likely to get the more severe complications, not the only persons who can get COVID. Because we've seen young people, old people, middle people, middle-aged people can get COVID-19. And there's also the question of testing healthcare workers, because healthcare workers would be the ones coming into contact with persons who might have COVID-19. And one of the things about this disease is that persons are asymptomatic. They are completely fine, but because of contact tracing and so on, we found persons who were absolutely fine but positive for the virus. So there is a possibility of persons being able to transmit the virus without even knowing that they have had COVID-19. Now, we are talking about the medical problems which could have occurred or which resulted from having the COVID-19 pandemic. And one of them was the need for additional staff. And we spoke about this just now in trying to decide whether or not everybody should be tested. And not only did we need additional staff, but you had to train the staff, because nurses were brought from different departments and they would not in their day-to-day routine be using ventilators, and doctors who were on the open wards weren't necessarily au fait with ICU care. So there was need for training. So the staff had to be diversified. They had to occupy different roles in order to supplement the healthcare system. And of course, this would be a burden to our healthcare system. The number of beds, I heard again in the United States of America about hospitals that are running out of bed space. And never would we have thought that the great United States of America would be, you know, running out of bed spaces, but it is very possible. In a pandemic, the healthcare services can be overwhelmed in a hurry. You got to think about fatigue of staff. On a normal day, somebody who's on call might be working 32 hours. So imagine you're going to be working overtime now to try to take care of the larger number of persons who would have been ill coming in. And one of the other things that happened, especially earlier up in the pandemic, was that persons heard the ad and misinterpreted the ad. So the ad said, if you had these symptoms, so fever, flu, if you travel, flu-like symptoms, so fever, cough, runny nose, and you had traveled or come into contact with somebody, do not go to the doctor. So there were persons who stayed home with strokes and heart attacks and asthma attacks and so on because they misinterpreted the ad saying not to go to medical institutions. So what happened then was a rebound of those cases. So there was an increase in the complicated cases. Let's say, for example, heart failure. So the heart failure patients, they're at home, they're huffing and they're puffing, but they heard, you know, don't go to the hospital. So by the time they get to the hospital, oh dear. Now, another thing that happened is something that we are thankfully beginning to pay more attention to, and it would be the increase in stress levels. I really think that still not enough attention is being paid to mental health disorders, but there is an increase in mental health awareness. And we don't even need numbers to say that persons have been stressed, because the main breadwinner in a household, for example, has lost his or her job as a result of no income, as a result of COVID, sorry. So there's no income in that particular family. How are you going to send to school the children? How are you going to feed the children? How are you going to pay your mortgage? How are you going to pay your rent? How are you going to put gas in the car or bus fare? So increased stress levels happened as a result of having had this COVID-19 pandemic descend upon our shores. Now, I'm one of those persons that if credit and debit are in the same sentence, I will get a headache. So economics and accounting and those related fields are outside of my pay grade. Hats off to those persons who can sit down and look at figures and make predictions and balance books. And no, that's not me. But if you look, our economy really did, and not only our economy, the economies worldwide really did suffer as a result of COVID-19. We are an island that's dependent on tourism for most of our income. The economists out there and those other persons who are financially sound can correct me if I'm wrong. So as a result of no tourists coming to our country, we have our hotels closing. We have those areas that supplement the hotels losing business. So the small farmers are impacted. And one of the things I remember hearing from an economist is that money needs to turn around in the economy. You need to spend money in order to make money. And therefore, with the decreased spending power, our economy just, unfortunately, along with the other economies in the world, suffered a hit. So the question is, and that many people asked, was a lockdown necessary? What's your opinion, Grayston?